Take me where the promises are real.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABAZOOM, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women on NABAZOOM tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Melissa C., of the Fifth Tradition Group, is our speaker. Robert Bell helped set this up. I know one thing about Robert Bell. He knows a good speaker when he hears one. So here's Melissa C.
Hey, I am Melissa C., and I'm an alcoholic. And, no pressure. Thanks, Robert. I hope we're still friends after my talk today. But one thing, as I was actually thinking, oh gosh, no pressure, I was thinking, well gosh, there is no pressure, because I am clear on one thing, regardless of what my story sounds like, is that I am definitely recovered from alcoholism today, and my life does not look chaotic and crazy and dismal as it did when I came in here. So, you know, everything else is kind of the details, right? So thank you, Tim, for inviting me to do this. It's fairly mortifying to have to look at myself for 50 minutes, but I'm doing all right so far. I am happy to see several of the people that I know from the rooms and in my home group, and some of my friends and sponsees. So I appreciate the familiarity here. It does make this a little less daunting. Yeah, so I'm sober. I got sober on September 11th of 2005. It wasn't by accident, and I do a lot of the things that I did today that I did when I came in. The most important of those things are that I have a sponsor, and today I'm sponsorable, try to be at least. I have worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and continue to try to practice those steps in my life. I sponsor people and try to help them to do the same, or kind of really just walk the path with them. It's what it amounts to most of the time. I have a relationship with a higher power that I didn't even know was a thing until I got to AA, much less that it was what my life depended on. So I'm happy about that, and you know, it is my go-to these days when I was kind of feeling a little nervous about having to talk to a computer and hear myself talk and see myself talk for almost an hour. I prayed, you know, I was like, all right, let's pause and pray and take a beat and then just trust that it's going to be fine. And that's new stuff for me since Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I have a home group. The Tradition Group is my home group, and we meet on Thursdays and Saturday nights. And I love it. And it's, where I do service. And, yeah, there are probably other things. Those are the highlights, though. That's kind of what I owe my recovery to, and what I try to highlight when I talk about kind of what my experience in the rooms has been, because that's the stuff that changed me. I was a mess when I came here. I meet a lot of other people who were messes when they came and started, you know, trying AA or getting introduced to AA. It's a fair miracle that I'm still here. because I definitely did not come kind of crawling in going, my God, please somebody show me how to quit drinking, because if I could just figure out how to quit drinking, everything would be fine. I learned about alcoholism in the rooms of AA. Definitely going to meetings. I went to a ton of meetings, but then also really with getting a sponsor and reading the book and coming to understand what alcoholism is. It's not just drinking too much, and it's not just not knowing how to moderate or, you know, kind of do it well or gracefully or like a lady or whatever. I've come to find that that's the root of all my problems and all my troubles. And yes, a major symptom is that I absolutely cannot control my drinking, and among other things. I have used other substances. I will probably say yes to anything that's going to change the way I feel. And that started for me early in my life. I think my first drink, actually, like purposeful drink on my own, was probably around 13, which is horrifying, being the stepmother of 13-year-old twin girls. They are little babies, and I definitely did not see myself as a little baby at 13. I thought I was fairly well grown and needed to do what the grown people were doing, and that was drinking. And I grew up in a family where drinking was social. It was fun for them. I mean, from the outside looking in, they seemed to drink like normal people. They had parties on the weekends. They had young parents, and they had friends over. They drank. Sometimes they got drunk, but it really wasn't a thing. So definitely was enticing and definitely was something that I wanted to do. And when I had the opportunity at 13, spend the night party, got some wine coolers from the refrigerator. It was fun. It was not anything crazy, life changing. Except I just really loved it. Thought it was great and thought I should probably do this as much as possible. Like, this is the fun stuff. I grew up very, very shy, cripplingly shy, I'd say, afraid of people, definitely did not feel good about myself, did not feel like I fit in with anyone, even in my family. I was convinced for quite a bit that I was adopted in my family, which I always think is funny when I say that, because my mom was 17 when she had me. She was a teen mom. I don't think that usually that happens when 17-year-olds adopt children. So in spite of the facts and how ridiculous it was, I felt very strong, like I'm different, I don't belong. I'm separate is what I would call it now. I didn't have a lot of the verbiage that I would use to describe my condition then that I have now. But separate, that was it. I felt separate, even in my own family. And my family was a loving family. I had a good family, I would say. It's very clear to me now. I did have a long list of grievances with my family when I came to AA. Thank God for a perception change over time and working steps. But at any rate, I had what I'd call like a normal family, childhood, growing up, what have you. Went to school. I was an overachiever. I got all good grades, straight A's. School was kind of easy for me, so it never even felt like a really big deal, but I got a lot of praise for that, and most of the adults in my life thought that I was a good girl, and most of what you would see was that. It supported that assessment, and I was quiet, stayed out of trouble, and got good grades. So I had a lot of freedoms as a result of that, and as I mentioned, once I found alcohol, you know, I didn't set out drinking every day and became a lush by 15, but I was definitely looking for what it provided to me, and I couldn't have put that into words either at the time. I just would have called it fun. There's a lot that I feel like I know about alcoholism today and my relationship with alcohol. It absolutely holds a lot of power for me. It can change the way I feel very quickly. And for somebody who is obsessed with how they feel, and I'm a depressive type, so I often am feeling not good and assessing whatever circumstances or conditions of my life to be not good, or good enough, or what have you. it was really great. Alcohol did a lot, and that effect that it produced was something that I wanted more of from the go. I had no idea about the things that I have come to know, like an allergy of the body, right? So something happens when I put alcohol in my body. I don't know that I had that from the jump. I don't recall experiences that would have supported that. I honestly don't know, and I'm not sure that it matters, but I eventually in my drinking did have that craving, right? So I drink some, and then I always want more, and I can't control the amount I take. So these are some things I know about my drinking now that I didn't know then. As a kid and as a teenager, it was just fun, and I just wanted to have fun, and I loved doing the stuff I wasn't supposed to do. I didn't have many. I had one friend, really, but she was a close friend, and we did all the things together. And so we did some of that drinking, and then I kind of had this other friend who I saw in the summertime, and she was more advanced than I was. She had come to discover alcohol and other things, and so I did all of those other things with her as well, and that was super fun, also. And that was kind of the course of my social life, well, all the way through until I got sober. But really, it was my teenage years. It was, you know, go to school, do your thing, do well, excel, whatever, get some freedoms, get some leeway, and then drink and party as much as you can in your free time. And when I got a car, it was a lot easier to do that. I started smoking pot, I think every day, as far as I can recall, like every day from the time I was able to escape or get out of my house and do that. I was smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol mainly on the weekends, because it was always very messy for me from the very beginning. I was the girl. I was just thinking about it, embarrassingly with the children, when I was, I don't even know how it came up, but I found myself telling them the story about Hunch Punch, which in the middle of the story I realized probably didn't need to happen, but we were already in it, so I went ahead. And but I was the girl who went, and I was like, I'm going to eat the fruit because fruit's delicious. And, you know, and despite the warnings, like, this is going to not be good for you. I was like, well, I know best. I'm going to do it anyway. And I was always the one that was sick or passed out or crying or just a mess, had to be taken care of. And that was pretty much from the beginning. Of course, there were some fun times, but, you know, it was just a crapshoot. What's going to happen when I drink? I don't know. And honestly, I didn't really care too much. It was not a big thing. I did it. It was fun. And that was it. I mentioned I'm kind of depressive type or what have you. And I was struggling with depression. I was always very sad. I remember from as long as I can remember feeling very sad. Very alone, very lonely, unloved, unlovable, unliked, ugly, fat, all the words that you would never say to your good friends. That was the constant barrage of thoughts that I was dealing with. And I did seek mental health care, and I went to psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists, took medication from the time I was 16, and that continued up to and through getting sober. So, I don't know if maybe it worked a little bit. I don't know. I never really gave any of it what I would now in retrospect say a fair shake, because I would certainly never tell them about my drinking or any of the drugs that I would do along the way. And I sought drugs from them often because I want a pill to fix me. It still sounds good sometimes, to be honest. Like, if the quick fix, fix me, make me feel better was always the name of my game. But it was also me in retrospect kind of looking at it like, I was trying to get peace. I was trying to be happy. I was trying to fix myself from, you know, 16 at least, formally. So I went through, I graduated high school just fine. I went off to college. Now we're going to have a lot of fun, and my drinking ramped up fairly quickly because there are no parents looking now, and it's what I did. I went to UGA in Athens, and so it was kind of, I'd call it like a party school or what have you. So it was very much the norm to drink and overdrink, actually, and that's what I definitely did. And It was mainly fun, but, you know, it was, again, that crapshoot where I couldn't tell you what the night was going to turn out to be. I honestly never went out saying I'm going to have a couple of drinks. That was not the way I wanted to drink, but I never wanted to wind up passed out outside in the parking lot. Like, that was never the plan. I never wanted to get in fights with the people who I was out with. I never wanted to embarrass myself by, you know, being the over-emotional one who can't be consoled because she's just too drunk, going home with people I didn't know and would not have if I were sober. I mean, things like that were never, that was never in the plan. But I never thought the drinking was a problem. I thought, well, it happens sometimes. This is what happens. You drink, and sometimes you drink too much. And I'm a partier, so I'm this is probably going to happen to me a lot. And it was worth it, I guess. It was whatever price was being paid was worth what good it was doing for me. And I did think it was good. There was never a bit of time where I was like, maybe I should pull back, cut down, or what have you. I was the lady who always was trying to change a brand, right? So there would inevitably be a time when, like, I think the first kind of experience was with Captain Morgan. There was a bad night. I don't even remember all the details now, but I did swear that off after a night of whatever happened. I was like, all right, no more Captain Morgans. We're changing it up. And, you know, and it was like, okay, just beer. And beer is gross, but I could drink a lot of cheap beer in Athens. And I was underage the whole time I was there, so it was kind of like get what you can get. But, and then, you know, something with the beer, and then we're off beer. It's, you know, let's go clear. So, like, you know, now it's going to be vodka or what have you. And I did that all the way to the end. I think I came in on red wine, but at any rate, I look back and see that was probably an attempt to manage my drinking. It didn't seem like it. It just seemed like good ideas. Like, if you've got a bad experience with this, don't do that again. Do something else. Because we're not talking about not drinking. We're just going to try to control it to a way to mitigate some of the consequences. So, you know, undergraduate school was fine. I graduated. I had some pretty bad nights sporadically in there where it had gotten like too far, and there were some talks from friends. But really, it was you know, I left my experience in Athens going, you know what, I'm still not happy. I know what I need to do, and it's get some new friends and get a new city and just start over, really. Because I kind of thought, well, you know, I've got this one friend. I went to college with her also. I've got this one friend. She's holding me back. I need to spread my wings and get some new folks because surely that will allow me to be whatever it is I think I'm supposed to be. I don't know. So I did go to graduate school, and I went to New Orleans. And New Orleans was super fun. And I did make some new friends, and I did start over. And I always, whenever I read the part in Bill's story, I guess, you know, I'd arrived. I felt like I had arrived in New Orleans because I had, you know, these new experiences. I had these new friends that were ones I wasn't just globbing on from grade school, which was my old best friend. That's what had happened there. And we were having fun, I thought, and drinking a lot, and I'm going to school, and school's easy, and I got a new therapist and a new psychiatrist and counselor there. So I'm still working on fixing myself and working on trying to find my way. And I would have told you, and I did. I said it for a long time, even after I got sober. If not for circumstances, that's where I should have lived and been, because I was thriving there. And so, bizarre, not really surprising, knowing what I know now of alcoholism, but the bizarre thing is that my perception is so messed up, because while I was in New Orleans, it was probably on paper the worst time in my life. I was hospitalized 3 times over the course of 2 years for alcohol poisoning, drug overdose. I wound up in the hospital after going out to just have fun. You know, one night I was outside of a bar getting chest compressions because they thought I might die, I suppose. And these things never rose to the surface when I'm assessing my time in New Orleans. I don't know what why my thinking is like that, but for this very skewed perception that I have. And I carry it with me today, save for the things that allow me some access to the truth, really through my relationship with God or higher power. And that was the story of my life. Like pretty much always count on me to look at a situation, appraise it in some way, and it be off. Because I'm looking through the lens of self. And it's definitely what happened in New Orleans. New Orleans was fine, but I was definitely not thriving. I did graduate with a master's degree somehow. But in addition to those hospitalizations for medical reasons related to my drinking, I was also put in a psychiatric hospital by my psychiatrist at the time because he feared that I would hurt myself or... there was a long list. I don't really remember because I was just mad. I was really mad and felt very victimized by that. He called my parents. They came and extracted me from New Orleans because I had graduated college, but I couldn't get a job. And it wasn't because of the job market. It was because I was really not doing much. Well, I think I was taking some stabs at getting a job. It was not my primary function, but I was drinking. And I was using other drugs as well at the time. And I was taking a lot of psychiatric medication because I would continue to go to the doctor saying, I'm not okay. I'm not happy. I can't do it. I'm overwhelmed. I'm anxious. I'm all these things. And, you know, they tried to help me, of course. So it was, I was a mess. I particularly love remembering the fact that my psychiatric hospitalization did come after graduation, and my profession is social work. So I was actually taken care of by some of my old classmates, which is super super fun and a real shot of humility, which completely flew past me. I felt very embarrassed, of course, but I just really felt mad at the doctor. I was like, this isn't my fault, you know. You've humiliated me now. You've put me in this situation, and how dare you? And I think I kind of fanned the flames of my mother's anger toward him as well by just, you know, talking of the inconsideration and inappropriate behavior of him committing me for my safety. So that was not my best point. But like I said, when I would tell you the story, I had arrived, right? So back I go to Savannah, which is my hometown, with my folks who had come to retrieve me. And I was like, well, that's fine. I'm going to start over again. And whatever, not my choice, but here we go. And fine then with the drugs. I will just drink, and I'll just drink on the weekends. And I'm going to get a new therapist and a new psychiatrist, and they'll give me the right meds, and I'll get myself sorted out, and I'll find happiness. I'll find whatever it is that I'm looking for. And I didn't know what it was. I was fairly sure, honestly, that I would never be happy. I felt like I was definitely just one doomed to suffer and wish that it would end sooner than later. You know, I remember thinking, this is mostly in my 20s, but I was like, God, don't let me live past 30. I can't do it. It's too much. And I also thought I'd be really old by then. And I amend that thought now that I'm well past 30, but that was my approach. That was my thinking. That was how I saw the world and my place in it. It wasn't good, it was torturous, and I can't do it. So anyway, I start over in Savannah. I get a job in my profession. I wind up buying a house with the help of my family, get my friend back to move in with me and help me pay for the mortgage. And my plan to just kind of leave the drugs alone, because I could maybe conceive, well, maybe that got a little crazy with the drugs, but gosh, drinking is just drinking. Like, what up? Like, it's nothing. And very quickly, I don't even remember the sequence of events, but it felt like I'm just adjusting the plan. nothing had to happen for me to completely throw my plans and designs of controlling my drinking. It just was like, well, but it because of this or that, or they offered, or it's a party, or what have you. And then once I'm kind of back into the old habits, that's what it was. I had no idea at this point that it was well beyond my control. And I believe that it was. I had no idea. Even getting sober and having that explained to me by, I went to a rehab center when I got sober, and basically went to AA classes or sobriety classes, like 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and had counselors and, gosh, what do they call them? Little, like coordinators or whatever, and case managers, all the, like a team of people helping me. And they were all, you know, trying to get me to understand, you know, that potentially I have alcoholism, potentially. I didn't just change my mind and make a bunch of bad decisions, because I'm dumb or something. It's, that I'm suffering from something that's beyond my control. I'm on my own. I'm sunk. You know, it took me a minute to really grab that. But anyway, the last couple of years of my drinking were pretty awful. My dad died very suddenly, and our whole family got upended, and just very emotionally overwhelming, and trying to take care of my mom, and my brother was 15 years old when that happened, and kind of take care of him, and trying to work and trying to take care of myself, which is a train wreck from the jump anyway. You know, my cat died, who I was, you know, very, very in love with and attached to. I had a friend commit suicide. Lots of little, a cluster of tragedies happened. And I remember making a conscious decision, like, bump it. I'm going to do whatever I need to do just to get through, because there's a lot going on here and I need something. I cannot face any of this sober, or I wasn't even thinking sober, but like not really like completely checked out. That's what I was going for at the end. Check me out. I don't want to deal with any of this. And I knew how to do that, and I did it. And I wound up losing my job, which that did get my attention. I'd never lost my job, but again, I felt like a victim. I was like, it's unfair. Don't they know how hard it is for me? And I'm struggling, and I'm depressed, and you know, it was always somebody else doing things to me to cause me pain. Things happened to me. I had plenty of things that happened to me where they did inflict pain, but the entirety of my life was not like that. And that's what, that's how I saw the world. And, when I came to rehab as a result of an intervention from my mother and my brother, who after I lost my job, I couldn't pay for my house. My roommate had, you know, wanted nothing to do with me. She's my old best friend. I didn't have any more friends. I had kind of, checked out of every aspect of my life, and my family was extremely concerned and said, listen, you are about to have to move out of your house. You don't have a job. You don't have any money. You're dying. We see it. You've got to get help. You can't come and live with us, and we're not going to give you any money. So, you know, I gave them conditions and said, find me a place where I can keep my car and my phone, and I don't want to be locked down anywhere. I want some freedom, and I want some place that's going to help sort out my depression and anxiety. And if you can find me a place like that, then I'll go. And bless my mom, she did. And so, that coupled with the fact that I was very tired, of kind of doing all of this. I'd had a handful of suicide attempts over the course of all of those years. I did not want to do what I was doing anymore. And I wound up thankfully in a rehab here in Atlanta. That's why I'm in Atlanta at all. And thankfully the place where I went was 12-step based. Their whole deal was, come in, you're going to work steps, you're going to get a sponsor, and you're going to recover if you want to. And so I set about doing that. And as I mentioned, I think alcoholism was never on my list of problems. I had a long list of problems of what's wrong with me. Alcoholism was not one. I would have given you drug addiction even, or drug abuse. I think I describe myself as, like, my first meeting was like in the house where I was staying, the rehab place. It's like, I'm Melissa. I'm, I abused cocaine. I think that was my first introduction. I was not going to say I'm an addict. I'm not going to say I'm an alcoholic. I didn't have that problem. I just used drugs maybe too much. That was kind of what I thought. And like I said, thankfully, I was there for a long time to hear a lot about alcoholism. They made me go to a meeting every day. I went to a meeting every day for the first year. Not because I'm awesome, but because they were, you know, had to sign sheets and stuff. But it was really great for me, too, because I wasn't done or ready or whatever I would say mentally to really embrace this as my problem, thus, you know, being willing to accept the solution that was on offer here. So I was a slow learner and resisted, and God took care of me anyway, is the only way that I look at it. I was beaten down. I was hopeless, absolutely hopeless. And one of the things that happened as a result of going to that rehab center, I was there for 5.5 months. It's a 12-week program, but they thought it best that I stay a little longer, so I did. And then after that, they suggested a halfway house, and so I went there. Again, so weird to think about, like, why I did these things. I don't really know, except for just, like, kind of just go, like, going, I don't know what else to do. Let's do this. And I went to a halfway house and stayed there 6 months. And there they required that I get a sponsor. And thankfully, I stumbled into a sponsor who was really knowledgeable about Alcoholics Anonymous, about alcoholism. And I was willing to do most of what she asked me to do, at least initially. I've had the same sponsor the whole time I've been sober, which isn't always the case. It just happens to be the case for me. And I at some point became willing to do all of what was required in this program. And I do believe I'm somebody who has to do all the things. All the things for me are probably close to what I mentioned initially. It's sponsorship, being sponsored and sponsoring, you know, servicing your home group, being in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps, you know, building and growing this relationship with a higher power, and having a home group and doing service in the home group. Those are the things I do now, and it was like a little bit by bit willingness to start adding those things in. I resisted almost every bit of it, not because I'm belligerent and just like, I'm not going to do your stuff. It was just like, I'm somebody who I feel like I know what's wrong with me. I feel like I know what's best for me. I don't want to do things that are hard either. I mean, it's hard talking to people. It's hard making phone calls. It's hard, to keep commitments. It's hard to be transparent. Those were things that, I mean, I would have told you, I'm so emotionally intelligent, I've got degrees in psychology, and I am a great listener, and I'm open, I'll talk about all my stuff. But you talk about, like, rigorous honesty, you talk about humility, willingness, transparency, selflessness, things like that. Those, I could have probably defined those terms for you, but I had no idea how to actually put them into practice. And I don't think many of us do. I mean, it's the root of our problem. It's the root of my problem as an alcoholic. You know, I'm entirely self-centered, which was super crazy to learn about myself, because I thought so little of myself. Really, really disliked myself. And I disliked myself kind of all of the time. I thought about myself all the time and how terrible I was all the time. And I had a sponsor who was kind enough to point out, yeah, that's self-centeredness. You are the center of your world, girl. And as long as that's the case, things aren't going to get any better. Revolutionary. I'd been to therapy for 20 years. And no one had ever pointed that out to me. So thankfully, you know, the program that we have here in AA, it's just designed to reduce that self-centeredness by gaining this, you know, access to this power that changes us and changed me. There are so many stories along the way where I kind of got a little glimpse of, I'm wrong about that, or, oh gosh, that's what they mean by whatever, or, oh, now I see why that's important. And I'm grateful for all of my struggles and stumbles, because I did a lot and do still, because it's now stuff that I can share with other people and hopefully be useful. You know, my life today is not one of despair and depression. I do get blue sometimes. I mean, to be honest, it's, you know, it kind of goes up and down, but the waves are not as tall as they used to be. And I have, I have a way of living. I have a way to move through that where I don't have to destroy my life because I feel blue. You know, more than that, I realize that a lot of the way that I see the world isn't always accurate. I'm wrong all the time, which is really great. You know, misperception is something that I'm pretty clear. Even these days when I'm like super sure that I'm probably right this time, I at least have the open-mindedness, or try to, well, I really, really, really think that it's his fault, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. And that's like some freedom right there. I don't think about drinking. I take women through the steps whenever they'll allow me to. So I do a lot of sponsoring, which is really wonderful for me because I love the connection, number one, but I feel like I'm constantly thinking about the stuff that I do to stay sober. So I'm talking about it with them and trying to be an example through my own actions with them. And things have really changed. I haven't tried to kill myself the whole time I've been sober, so I'll count that as a win. I have a family that counts on me. I have a husband, which is crazy because I definitely thought I'd be the old person who never found much, like, forget about peace. We're not finding peace, but gosh, find a partner who would be interested in being with me that I wanted to be with also. And he came along with three children. I never had any children of my own, so I get to be like a kind of parent to these girls, and that's like a blessing that I never even knew I wanted. And I have friends that are good and that I like and lasting, you know, like, so these are like little spin out side effects of working in program. But gosh, this time that we're in now with all the scary things coming, I've been reminded so often that, man, I'm glad that I have a way to live. It doesn't take away all of my fear. I've been scared through some of this stuff, and it's been uncomfortable and inconvenient. And but, man, I don't have to drink. I don't have to explode my life. I don't have to, you know, quit my job and crawl into the bed and just stay there because I can't cope. You know, like, I can walk through with a bunch of other people who are feeling the same thing. And my relationship with God grows as a result of this. And now I get to trust God with, you know, a pandemic. So, you know, there you go. I am really grateful now that I'm finished with my talk to have done it. I appreciate seeing these familiar faces, and some of you I don't know, but I love NABA. I love that it's consistent and it's there. And gosh, whenever I have a sponsee and they're looking for a meeting and I don't go to a meeting on whatever day they're looking for, I know NABA has meetings. So I appreciate that, you know, you guys are doing this online and giving us all access to AA during a time when otherwise, obviously, we wouldn't. I keep thinking about that too. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Melissa, for sharing your many blessings with us tonight. And for those of you listening, please come back next week and hear Tinsley E. tell his story.
First I slipped and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me. And finally, waking there, I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Take me where the promise is.